Sie hören eine Veranstaltung der Leipziger Buchmesse. Für die Inhalte ist die Leipziger Buchmesse nicht verantwortlich. Viel Spaß beim Hören.
Ich werde zuerst einen Text im Rahmen dieser Solidaritätsaktion von Dennis Yücel vorlesen. Dann werde ich den Autor Guy Delisle vorstellen, kurz was zum Buch sagen und dann haben wir ein kurzes Interview auf Englisch miteinander. Kurz der Text von Dennis Yücel. Zwei Brüder aus dem Werk Taksim ist überall, Edition Nautilus. Seit Ali Ismails Tod hängt vom Balkon eine türkische Fahne. In der Wohnküche seiner Eltern brennt Neonlicht, wie in vielen türkischen Wohnzimmern. Es gibt Kaki, geröstete Melonenkerne und Rakie, den die 47-jährige Emel Kormaz selber gebrannt hat, von dem sie aber nur einen Schluck trinkt. Ihr Mann Sahab ist 9 Jahre älter, ein herzlicher Mann, dem man ein Leben in harter Arbeit ansieht. Wenn sie über ihren Sohn sprechen, steigen ihnen schnell die Tränen in die Augen. Im Sommer 2012 beginnt Ali Ismail zu studieren, Englisch auf Lehramt. Seiner Mutter sagt er, dass er nicht in Antakya bleiben will. Er will etwas von der Welt sehen. Er mag Metallica, dem großen Brüder Gürkan bleibt das rätselhaft. Verständigen können sie sich auf den Polit-Arabesk-Musiker Ahmed Kaya und auf Pink Floyd. Wenn man ihm gesagt hätte, dass sein Bild bei einem Konzert von Roger Waters zu sehen sein würde, hätte er vor Freude geweint, sagt Gürkan. Als Roger Waters im Sommer in Istanbul gespielt hat, lächelte Ali Ismail von der Bühne und wir haben geweint. Ali Ismail beteiligt sich an Schulprojekten und liest den Bewohnern eines Altersheims vor. Ein andermal bringt er Kleidung und Bücher an Dorfschulen. Er fährt Skateboard, er fotografiert, er hat einen Hund. Politisch organisiert ist er nicht. Ab und zu läuft er bei einer Demonstration mit. Ali Ismail ist kein rebellisches Kind, aber auch kein allzu braves. Mal rasiert er sich eine Glatze, dann lässt er sich einen Mohikaner schneiden. Seinen Eltern gefällt das nicht, aber sie üben keinen Zwang aus. Dass er raucht, verheimlicht Ali Ismail allerdings. Das weiß sein Cousin und enger Freund Volkan. Der kennt noch ein Geheimnis. Ali Ismail hatte sich in eine Kommilitonin verliebt. Aber er ist nicht mehr dazu gekommen, es ihr zu sagen. Die Umstände von Ali Ismails Tod erzählt sein Bruder Gürkan so. Er hatte am 2. Juni mit einem Freund den Mietvertrag für eine neue Wohnung unterschrieben. Auf dem Rückweg gingen sie zu den Protesten. Als die Polizei Tränengas und Wasserwerfer einsetzte, verloren sie sich aus den Augen. Ali Ismail floh in eine Seitenstraße, wo er zusammengeschlagen wurde. Später fanden ihn Freunde und brachten ihn in ein Krankenhaus. Von dort wurde er in ein anderes transportiert. Da sagte man ihm, dass er nichts Ernstes habe. Man gab ihm ein Schmerzmittel und bandagierte seinen Arm. Er sollte sich noch einem Orthopäden zeigen und wartete bis zum Morgen. Dann hieß es, dass er zunächst eine Aussage machen müsse. Ali Ismail ging dann heim, um sich auszuschlafen. Am frühen Abend ging er mit Freunden zur Polizei. Danach rief er mich an. Er wirkte auf einmal verwirrt und verdrehte die Buchstaben. Er sagte Solib statt Polis. Als ich hörte, dass er seit dem Aufwachen so verwirrt war, habe ich gesagt, sie sollen sofort in ein Krankenhaus fahren, in ein anderes, wo ein Bekannter von mir arbeitet. Dort wurde eine Hirnblutung diagnostiziert und Ali Ismail in die Universitätsklinik verlegt. Auf der Fahrt hat er das Bewusstsein verloren. Nach 37 Tagen im Koma ist er verstorben. Obwohl viele Geschäfte in der Straße Videokameras haben, finden sich zunächst keine Aufzeichnungen. Später stellt sich heraus, dass die Bänder professionell gelöscht wurden. Dann gelangt ein Video an die Medien, auf dem man sieht, wie 5 Männer mit Knüppeln und Baseballschlägern auf Ali Ismail einschlagen. Schließlich taucht ein Video auf, das zeigt, dass Ali Ismail an dieser Stelle zwei weitere Male geschlagen wurde. 8 Männer sind nun angeklagt, darunter 4 Polizisten. Separat läuft das Verfahren gegen einen Arzt wegen Verletzung der Sorgfaltspflicht. Um über die Prozesse zu informieren, eröffnet Gürkan, der Bruder, nach dem Tod einen Twitter-Account. Auch Ali Ismail war viel im Internet. Seine letzten Tweet verschickte er am 29. Mai 2013. Es gibt nichts Dümmeres, als für eine Idee, einen Wert oder einen Staat zu sterben. Nichts ist so wertvoll wie das Leben eines Menschen. Ali Ismail Korkmaz wurde 19 Jahre alt. So, jetzt kommen wir zu dem Buch Geisel von Guy Delisle. Ganz kurz zu dem Schriftsteller, zu der Person Guy Delisle. Er wurde 1966 in Kanada, in Quebec geboren und hat dann plastische Kunst in Toronto studiert, kam dann allerdings zum Zeichentrickfilm, zum Animationsfilm nach Europa. Und da die Animationsfilme in Asien produziert werden, ist er dann auch nach Pyongyang zum Beispiel gefahren oder auch nach Shenzhen in China, wo seine ersten Reportage-Comics entstanden sind. Für seine Graphic-Novel-Auszeichnung aus Jerusalem hat Guy Delisle 2012 den Preis für das beste Album in Angoulême erhalten. Er macht auch nicht nur politische Comics, sondern auch den Ratgeber für schlechte Väter, von dem es inzwischen 3 Teile gibt, und Kindercomics über seinen Sohn Louis. Normalerweise verarbeitet Guy Delisle immer eigene Erfahrungen in seinen Büchern. In diesem Fall ist das anders. In diesem Fall hat er die Geschichte von Christophe André aufgeschrieben, der 1997 in Tschetschenien entführt wurde von tschetschenischen Rebellen. Guy Delisle hat davon in einem Zeitungsartikel gelesen und hat das auch schon zum ersten Mal in einem anderen Comic, nämlich in seinem Shenzhen-Comic, erwähnt. Und irgendwie hat ihn diese Geschichte nicht mehr losgelassen und er hat dann 2001 Christophe André getroffen und hat ihn stundenlang interviewt. Die beiden haben nächtelang zusammengesessen und aus diesen Aufzeichnungen heraus ist dann dieses Buch entstanden. Ganz kurz, das Buch beginnt direkt mit der Entführung von Christophe André und er wird von Milizen aus seinem Bett gerissen, ihm werden die Augen verbunden, er wird dann in ein Auto verfrachtet, über die tschetschenische Grenze von Inguschetien nach Grozny gefahren und wird mit einer Handschelle an einen Heizkörper gekettet, wo er für 3 Monate bleibt und nicht mehr loskommt und spricht kein Wort der Sprache seiner Entführer, er weiß nicht, wie lange er dort ist, er weiß nicht, ob währenddessen die Organisation Ärzte ohne Grenzen, für die er eigentlich arbeitet in Tschetschenien, sich um seine Freilassung bemüht. Als er dann hört, 1 Million Euro werden gefordert als Lösegeld, verliert er dann auch die Hoffnung und sagt, okay, ich werde wahrscheinlich niemals freikommen. Und mit dieser Ungewissheit sitzt er in der Zelle und die Zeit vergeht. Und das war, glaube ich, auch die große Herausforderung von Guy Delisle, einfach diese vergehende Zeit darzustellen, weil wer so einer Geiselhaft hat, passiert nicht viel außer Gedanken im Kopf und Hoffnung. Und das sind auch große Themen, die Guy Delisle dann halt auch verarbeitet in diesem Comic. So. So, we start the interview in English, so you can understand me now. So, I want to ask you a question because I just read the text of Denis Yücel, who is in prison now in Turkey. Also, he doesn't know when he comes out, where exactly he is, and what his future is. So, Do you see any parallel to your story or to the story Christophe André told you in the interview, being a hostage?
Yeah, this is a terrible situation because not knowing when you're going to come out is the worst, because in your head somehow you have to schedule time or to plan that maybe in 2 weeks you're going to be out. And that's why Christophe was saying that being kidnapped was worse than being in prison. At least in prison you know why and when you're going to come out of that. But in that case it's different because he's in prison, but he doesn't know how it is. So it has some similarities with being kidnapped.
Okay. So what do you think, for example, is time a very important subject for you, for Christophe André, for Denis Yücel maybe too? So what role, how important is time in this context?
Yeah, for Christophe it was every morning you would wake up and remember the time, the date, like this is today the 15th, and he would repeat that a few times in his head, not to forget it, because he wanted to keep track of the time. And like he said, it was very, very important for him because to keep track of the time was the only reference he had because he didn't know where he was. He was kidnapped, but he was not sure where he was exactly. There was no reason why he was kidnapped. It was just being at the wrong time, at the wrong place. And he didn't know when he would come out of that, so he had no reality on life, and the only reality he had was the time, so he was keeping it very, very precisely every day. And knowing that he's the 15th of September, for example, was a way for him to be in contact with the rest of the world, because his family, his people outside, somewhere outside the world where he was, everybody was sharing that day together. Everybody knew it's the 15th. And knowing that he was with them somehow, just with the time, was very important for him. And that's something that most kidnapped people do, apparently, because I've read a few stories. And every day, it's very, very important for them to keep track of time.
Yeah. And how was it for you to deal with this passing time? So was it difficult for you to draw, to illustrate this?
Yeah, I had to illustrate everything that Christophe was saying to me, because I recorded him and I wanted to be very precise. And since this subject was very important, I couldn't avoid it, of course. And that's why the book is so. There's so many pages. It's a 400 pages book because I wanted to describe the time to show that. At first, he thought that he would be there only for 2 days or 3 days, and then he would go back to work, and that would be just a bad memories. And 1 week goes by, 2 weeks, and then a month, and then he doesn't know how long he's going to stay, and then you have to stop thinking because you're going to go crazy. And the way to illustrate that is to have a lot of page, because I wanted to show the first day where you think, you know, every hours you think that, okay, they're going to come back and they're going to free me. And then the weekend passed, and then another week passed. And I wanted to show almost every day so that the reader is really into Christophe Sandré's mind. That was my main subject of the book, to be able to go through his experience just like he did, and to be able to know what it is to be kidnapped and to have no control over your life, and how do you cope with that.
Tell me something about how you worked, because you were telling me before that you make like photos of yourself handcuffed on a radiator to see how the image is and then to draw it more precisely.
Yeah, I needed to have photos, and it's very easy, so I bought a pair of handcuffs, knowing that I would have to draw them very often, because it's something that is very present in every page. And since at the studio that I share with my friends who does the same work as me, we have a radiator, so it was easy to just attach me and sit there. And I had a friend who took a bunch of pictures that I've used actually quite a lot, to be able to have a more realistic drawing and to have a reference for the book. That was one part of the most part of the book is being on that matlas for 300 pages, basically. So once I had these pictures, I know I could work on the majority of the book.
You also changed your style a little bit, because normally you have a simplified, ironic comic style, and this time it's more detailed. You show the faces, you show the details of the room. So why did you change your style?
I didn't decide okay, I have to change style. It's just that knowing that I would have to illustrate that story, and it's a very serious story, because he's in a situation that is very tense and stressful. There's no humor. It was not me either. It was someone else talking. And all that made me adjust my drawing to the situation of that story. And it's a realistic story, so my drawing became a bit more realistic. Not that I wanted to, but it just... that's what the story needed. So it looks more when I do sketches on the street of buildings, except it's based on human figures. I practiced a little bit on a few photos I had, and it came actually a bit naturally. That's the way I draw when I do more realistic stuff.
Okay. You said also once that you found some similarities between you and Christophe, the hostage. So what kind of similarities?
Well, we became friends over the 15 years that the process has taken to do that book. And we have the kids of the same age, and he's a quiet guy, so I am. He's a bit shy, and we have a basically the same character somehow. And when I was drawing his story, I guess there's a part of me that goes through the book, because once in a while there's a touch of humor that comes in that story. It was not so fun, of course. But since it's my natural way of telling stories to always have a little funny twist to it, I guess a little bit of me was transferred to Christoph's personality somehow, without my consentment.
Okay. Somehow. But I saw in your other books that you wrote before, that you draw before, that also like solitude is like a big subject for you. So, and also Christoph is... In this captivity, he's very lonely and he's bored and something, and it's maybe something what you know also from your traveling to Pyongyang or from Burma. So is it also like a similarity?
I've explored that theme a little bit before, because being in China, I was on a situation where I was very on my own, not able to communicate with the people. A bit like Lost in Translation. And I remember I was actually thinking of Christoph's story, because I've read it on the newspaper just before. And I was there working on my job in China, and felt that loneliness that I've transposed in the book in somehow. But the basis was a bit humor, a bit like the movie Lost in Translation. But in Christophe André, I had that challenge as well, to show a situation that you have a lot of repetition, a lot of routine, and he was not really bored, because that's not the name. He was in a situation of a lot of stress, so he was always tense. He was kind of on the lookout and always alert that something might happen that he can take advantage of, or profit, or if they forget to lock the door, they forget to attach him. If this happens, he has to be fully awake and be able to quickly react to that. So he was in a situation that is tense, but then time goes by, and of course I had to show that. People have described my book like a minimalistic suspense, because not much is happening, but still you want to know what's going on. So I like that description.
Okay, and why did you choose then the story of Christoph André, where nothing really happened? What was this challenging for you? Did you tell yourself, I really want to try how I get along with this?
Yeah, when you have to resume a story, of course, it's the guy of someone who's kidnapped and he managed to escape. It's really quick, but then when you go in details, lots of little things happen. And I like to work with small details. That's what I do when I do my traveling books. And except for this one, it was details taken that Christoph André told me. Every day something happened, like noise, and he would hear once they forgot to attach him. He tried to unlock the handcuffs, and they moved him around. He was in contact on the phone, and then a lot of little details that I thought were very, very fascinating. And I right from the beginning, I told to myself, I'm going to put everything in the book, and I'll see how long the book is. But it was important for me to put everything, so we have the full experience that he has been through.
Okay. So what are your next projects? Is it like funny things again, like your parental guide?
Yeah, my heart naturally goes back to some funny things and short stories, because after a big book like that, who's serious, I want to do the opposite, which is short stories, probably for children in a humorous way. But right now I'm working on some animation, some adaptation of my previous book, the one with the father and the little children. So it's just a starting project. So it's 3 minutes of animation, but it takes me a lot of time to do.
Okay. So what happened to your film of Pyongyang? Because out of your book, your former book of Pyongyang, they planned a film, no?
What happened there? Yeah, I don't have news on that. Yeah, I guess they gave up, because it's been a long time now. And
can you tell shortly what happened? They forbid it, no? So
yeah, they've worked on so it's actually the filmmaker from the Caribbean Pirates. So his name is Gore Verbinski, and he was interested in doing Pyongyang as a film. And 2 weeks before we signed, North Korean people hacked the system of Sony, and they threatened the company Sony to release all the film they've taken from them if they did the projection of a movie who was making fun of Kim Jong-il, so they were very unhappy about that. And because of that, all the producers were very afraid to do anything that has to do with North Korea. So they said, well, you know that project about North Korea with Gore Verbinski, we're not going to distribute that. So it was the distribution who said, we don't want this kind of movie anymore. So they really gave up on North Korea, which is very strange. And since there was no distribution, there was no production, and there was no filmmaker at the end. And somehow I have no news, and I guess in Hollywood, you know, project goes by, and I doubt that this is ever going to happen now.
Can you imagine to make out of a film out of this book?
Not me, but actually two filmmakers imagine it, and we have to choose between one of them to
who's French or Hollywood or
one's from Canada and one is from France. Yeah.
Okay.
No Hollywood this time.
Okay. Good. Yeah, maybe if you still have questions. I think we have some time left. I don't know how much time we have. 4 Minuten? Ja, also wenn Sie vielleicht auch noch Fragen haben, dann wäre es jetzt irgendwie eine Variante, Sie zu stellen. Falls Sie das Buch gelesen haben oder wenn Sie es auch nicht gelesen haben. Geht in die Liste hier. Ja, da ist eine Frage. Laut und deutlich bitte.
Ich hatte gehört, dass Sie jetzt mit der Idee zu Christoph André auf ihn zugekommen sind, dass sozusagen Sie daraus einen Comic machen wollten. Kommt es vor, dass Leute sozusagen zu Ihnen kommen und meinen, dass ich glaube, dass es eine interessante Geschichte wäre? Ja, genau. Kommt es vor, dass Personen auf Sie zukommen und meinen, das wäre eine interessante Geschichte? Oder also oder haben Sie... Also, ja.
Well, this happened on the only once and within the 15 years I've worked on this project. I've never met any other person where I went, wow, this is such a fantastic experience that I'd like to do a comic book with that. It just happened that I've released this in September in France, and since then there's a lot of people who send me emails about their life and their fantastic life, and they want me to illustrate that, but they go in all sorts of directions that are not my cup of tea at all. One has spent 15 years in a sect, being abused physically and sexually. So I like to do kind of a mainstream project, and this is not so mainstream. And one of the guy who sent me an email had he's into sadomasochist fantasies, yeah, and he likes to be attached. So he really enjoyed the book of someone being attached for 300 pages. I guess he's one of the only one who was very deceived at the end because he finally escaped. And yeah, I said again, well, that's not so much my cup of tea. Thanks a lot.
Jetzt noch eine andere Frage aus dem Publikum. Noch jemand, der Gideon eine Frage stellen will? Gut, dann sage ich vielen Dank, merci beaucoup.
Merci, danke schön. Ja, danke schön.
Und noch einen schönen Tag. Es gibt jetzt auch noch eine Signierstunde am Stand E207. Da wird Guy Delisle sitzen und seine Bücher signieren, aber auch wirklich nur ein Buch pro Person. Da drüben dann an dem Stand von diesem Comic-Sammelstand. Vielen Dank.
Danke fürs Zuhören. Wir sehen uns auf der nächsten Leipziger Buchmesse.